actually launched today's proceedings. And as you see there from the title, looking at the theme of what would a sustainable Cornwall look like, Edwina is portfolio holder for Environment, Heritage and Planning for Cornwall Council, but she is also the ward councillor for Lew West, could I get this right, Lansalos and Llaneglos.
Llanteglos,
sorry.
Polperro and Polruan. Polperro and Polruan. Thank you.
Over to you, Edwina.
Can I ask you to flip over my slides?
Yeah, no, that'd be great. Yeah. I know most women can multitask, but I can't hold bits of paper and think at the same time. Good morning. Thank you very much for inviting me here today. Next slide. Thank you. This is what you said, what Colette referred to, sort of from the questionnaire, the vision for sustainability. So I'm going to do a quick canter through that, and I should be more looking at it through the lens of local authority, through local government. So, thriving connected communities, economy. We know the value of some of our environments. For example, we know that the South West Coast Path generates £177 million for the Cornish economy. But we don't know enough. That's just the economy. We need to know about the impact on health and well-being, and the environment in itself and biodiversity. We know a bit about the value of culture, and an example is the Discover the Extraordinary from the World Heritage Site, their project, and it actually put a monetary value to that. But be careful not to think just in monetary terms. Equality and quality of life. Now, I'm very lucky to live beside the sea. I've always lived in Loo. I have access to some really high quality, beautiful landscape. Others don't. So I think the point about that for me is about narrowing that poverty gap. It's not just about poverty in financial terms. It's about poverty in our well-being. Balanced culture and nature. Well, man's intervention in Cornwall has shaped our landscape. It's not a natural landscape. But it's created that distinct culture that I think underpins our culture and Cornwall. Think, act and understand our local impacts. We don't know enough, and I think that's the work of the ESI can help us to build that picture, build that case, foster that understanding. Collaboration. This is a really good example of collaboration today. And actually, as an aside, my portfolio areas of environment, heritage and planning, I think actually encompasses what we're trying to achieve today. And that's new. That was only created last year as a portfolio. So balancing that sense of place that Gary talked about in our planning system with our rich heritage, but also our environment. So I think that for a local authority is actually a really good step forward. But collaboration is essential. We have to share our resources that in terms of the local authority, we're talking about the public sector family working more closely together, whether it's Blue Light Services or local authority or university for that matter. We've got to be a bit clever about it. Resilient, dynamic, resourceful. We do have to re-examine the way that we do things. But that doesn't mean to say we shouldn't be ambitious, that we shouldn't be innovative, and there's some great work going on in the ESI that I've seen. And I would commend you to come and have a look round and have the tour. Putting little cameras on bees was absolutely amazing. But we must not roll over and accept austerity measures as being, oh my God, you know, it's all doom and gloom. I think this is an opportunity to actually make something that's better and not say it's just all too hard. Okay. So I guess you all know the common definition of sustainability. The Brundtland report was quite clear about that. I'll give you a couple of seconds to read that. Okay. Must admit that I'm speaking here today with some trepidation in the ESI, surrounded by academics and professors. often think that sustainability is a word that's bandied around. It's thrown in as being, oh, well, that is sustainable, or that's not sustainable. But I don't think we really understand what that means, and it may mean different things to different people. But we really need to need to understand what it does mean. I don't profess to have all the answers. What my presentation today is to perhaps draw some of those links between culture and the environment and stimulate debate. So there'll be quite a few questions through my presentation that may be helpful through the rest of the day. If I take one of the elements, strands of my portfolio, planning, in the National Planning Policy Framework, which is the national guidance that we have to follow, it does talk about sustainability, and it talks about the three pillars of sustainability: economic, environmental, and social. But trying to weigh all those up when you're faced with a planning application, members need to have the judgment of Solomon and sometimes the skin of a rhino to find their way through that. So, how have we tried to do this? Well, the traditional view is triple bottom line. It's harmony and balance, all working perfectly in harmony, but we know that's not what real life is like. So how it works in practice on the right there, and this is particularly true in local government. We're very siloed. It's very much a vertical arrangement, and I think we need to be having more of a horizontal conversation rather than that vertical. There's always conflicting demands and tensions. I think the point of my portfolio changing to reflect that is really good. It's a start, it's a step in the right direction. Directorate reorganisations, we've now what's called E-cubed, triple E, environment, enterprise, and I've forgotten the third one. Can you help me, Rachel? I can't remember the third one. Economy. Sorry, gotcha. We call it EQ'd, but actually that's quite important in terms of the local authority, of bringing those strands together. We're thinking about the environment, we're thinking about the economy and about those social issues. So that's actually good. Not perfect, but it's a step. So those tensions, particularly in austerity times and our budgets being depressed, is providing a toilet, more in public toilet, more important than filling a pothole or supporting Cornish language. That's really, really tough decisions. Often these silos, they promote protectionism. I'm going to protect my budget, whatever, and I'm not really worried about what happens over there. And I have to say that my experience of the latest budget setting process in the council over a four-year period as a cabinet, all sort of fighting our corner, but we've been very mindful about other areas. Now that's a change. Again, not perfect, but it's moving in the right direction. That's the local authority approach. So the reality: we have one planet. We share that with animals and insects and humans and plants. It's not just us. We share that, and we have to be mindful of that. We all interact with each other, some more than others. But I think we still need to be thinking about this horizontal conversation and not the vertical. Nature is not siloed. It doesn't think, oh, I'm going to put water management over here and I'm going to put food production over here. They're intrinsically linked. It's systems within systems, and they interconnect in different ways, so often that we don't understand. Ecological restoration is an attempt to balance nature and culture. Thank you, Rachel, for that one. I thought that was a very interesting thought. And that environmental growth, and I'll come to environmental growth in a minute, wants both to flourish. So it's not one or the other. It's not that or that. They are linked. Within the council, devolution is a challenge. Not just because we want to offload stuff because we can't afford the revenue to support it. I personally believe, and my colleagues believe, that it's the right thing to do, that communities are more connected to those local goods and services and have a much bigger stake in that. But in that process, we need to be thinking about, well, if we devolve that little bit of parcel of land over there, we don't want it, it costs us a fortune to cut the grass. But we need to understand the value of that piece of land. What role does it play in the ecosystem? What role does it play in water management? What role does it play in our enjoyment? Is it a picnic area full of, again, your sense of place? It needs to be beyond the financial value. We need to be reducing the impacts of that limited resource by some upstream thinking. And I think my mother would call that a stitch in time, nothing new. However, I think you can read the fact there, 20,000 litres of water to grow a kilo of coffee. Is that really sustainable? This is all largely being driven by consumerism in a global economy. Do we really need strawberries in January? Can I really get by without those strawberries? If we think and purchase more seasonally and locally, and I do have my veggie box delivered for me from Keverell Farm, 3 miles away, and I know that they work very hard to deliver that to me, and I feel a lot better for it. But what effect of those strawberries grown in Kenya, or those beans from somewhere else in Africa, what effect will it have on them, on perhaps what we view as more third world? But are they really third world? So every system has a finite limit. Our globe has finite resources. We are living beyond our means. I think we can all, most of us can say we do live beyond our means in our personal lives. But in terms of that global resource, with that amount of people and rising to 9 billion by 2050, we are consuming 3 globes worth of that finite resource. And that just is not sustainable. Can we continue to sustain this? It is quite hard, though, to think in global terms and act locally when you've got your own personal pressures to deal with. It's quite hard to change mindsets, and change in itself is scary. Are we trapped on this hamster wheel of modern work life? How do we get that message across? So, how we provide quality lives will need to be different. 3-planet economy to a 1-planet economy. So we've got to think differently. It's just not sustainable. New business models, circular rather than lineal. We have to think differently. Now, I have to give credit to Dr. Alan Knight, the former chair of the Nature Partnership, who's moved on to Save the World somewhere else, because he highlighted this slide, but I thought it was so good, I've stolen it. Is capitalism sustainable? Discuss. It could be, but I'm not sure it is at the moment. And I'm not making any party political statements about that. It's coming from a sustainability perspective. We perhaps need to challenge the norms of consumerism. Can we endure with this current growth? And a local example of that is the Cornwall Local Plan, which I'm leading on. The tensions on it are enormous, but the rules being set by somebody else. They're being set by that National Planning Policy Framework and being pulled in that direction up there, when actually my thought is perhaps I want to be pulled in a different direction, but to not have that local plan in place is worse, because there's no plan. The slide on the right is Marks and Spencers have been, I think, using as a marketing tool. Perhaps I should be more generous to them about clothes swap. I mean, I do that with my friends anyway. It's great fun. New outfit for old. Are we happier? I think this was something that Dr. Alan Knight talked about a lot. No, are we happy? Is that a measure of all of this? It's about how good we feel about ourselves. We need to think about the role of technology in all of this. We hear about all the job losses in banks and, libraries being self-service and channel shifting to how we pay our council tax. That's going to have an impact on jobs and resources, population growth. At the moment, currently in Cornwall, I think the birth rate is outstripping the death rate. He's nodding, it must be true.
It's just happened.
We're good breeders in Cornwall. This side here, and this was something that Dr. Alan Knight used to work for the Kingfisher Group, and his chairman, Ian Cheshire, the Kingfisher Group, said, we need to radically redesign our business models with less emphasis on growth and more on well-being. Well, from a top company, I think that's a fantastic thing. And this idea of the street club has been championed by B&Q, where we've all got that power tool that sat in the back of our cupboard. It's been there for 20 years. We might pull it out once in a blue moon and then it's rusted out or it doesn't work. But it's talking about a street, a community, a village sharing that resource. What a brilliant model. So back to local government, public services. Are they sustainable? Talked about the local authority being very silo. Austerity measures and the cuts from government to our grant, they can be set to just salami slice, cut. But my glass is always half full, and I think that is an opportunity to actually be innovative, be different. We might have, for example, this is controversial, but libraries are a Victorian creation. They were set up to encourage the masses to have access to good to books, to literacy, to improve themselves. But we access that literature on a Kindle, on iTunes. We download, we take it in different ways now. So we need to perhaps think about it in a different way. Dogged by climate change deniers, dogged by some political parties through political dogma, hijacking issues because they hook into a popular view, often based on fear. Local authority asset stripping, saving to save those revenue costs. We've got to think a bit more. But where would we be without those public services? This is not about a return to being hunter-gatherers. Well, some of you might like to. This is not a return to the early industrialisation and sending children up chimneys and miners dying early of diseases. Important though that legacy is. It's not about going back to no travel. It's not about we all having to do manual work, disease, early death. We don't want to go back to that. We have to find a new way. So, contrast and challenge to Cornwall. We don't want this side closed because of floods. We want to be resilient to those floods. Environmental risks can lead to social and economic risks. Poor development, low quality development. Apparently that bus station was voted the ugliest building, had the ugliest building award. I'm not sure where it is, but in the eye of the beholder, I guess. And this theme about happiness, that was a billboard in Cornwall, it was last summer. Cornwall's the happiest place in the country. Why was that? I'm really intrigued by that, because I seem to be working longer hours. I seem to be more indebted. The Citizens Advice Bureau did some work which laid a map over Cornwall, not where the low wages were or where the traditional areas of poverty were, but it mapped indebtedness, and it was in middle-class areas, 1 month away from being in real serious financial trouble. So why are we happier in Cornwall? Is it because of our rich cultural history and our high-quality environment? So,
How do we achieve sustainability?
Oh, sorry, I put that on last night.
That's okay.
Sorry. I would do the whole lot. Okay. We need to make it relevant to businesses and to individuals and easy to do. If we don't make it easy, and communication is very key to this, we can get very bogged down in being sandily people that are technical. We need to make it relevant to people. We need to flag up those role models that are really doing really good work. And the Sustainability Award, Business Sustainability Awards, in 5th of December, is a really good example of showing that you can make a profit, you're allowed to make a profit, and you can do good stuff for the environment and socially. So leading by example. What's likely to be the catalyst for change? Peak oil? Food and fuel? Floods? I'm not sure. Just have a worry about it all. We need to find ways to change those mindsets and encourage people to change their behaviours. For me, the starting point is education, education, education. I can't remember who said that, but I think whoever said it, spot on. We need to engage with young people. Young people are sponges. They're interested in the planet. Catch them young. There's new ways of working and thinking, and an example of that is we've been going through agonies recently with the area of outstanding natural beauty, and not sure whether the DEFRA funding's going to come down. We match it in Cornwall Council. It's been a really horrid time, so our protected landscapes are really important. But through the chairman, there's been a quite visionary, I think, and thinking about, right, we've had a kick now. We need to think about how we're going to do it differently in the future. And I think what's popped out the other end that's being recommended to the partnership in December is actually about being even more sustainable, not having to rely on the vagrancy of government grants. It's about income generation, sharing resource, being a bit smarter about it. So collaboration, to me, is very key. And I was introduced to something yesterday I haven't heard of before, and it's called Pay It Forward. I don't know if anybody's heard of that. It seems to be an American. I quickly Googled it last night. Pay It Forward. Random acts of kindness. I like that. Good deeds for others in need. As a business concept and perhaps a way to promote your business, that's a powerful, positive effect on the system, and it helps. We all feel good when we do something worthy, so it helps with self-esteem. So to wrap this up, the final slide I'm not going to go through. I'm just to flag up to you. I want to leave a legacy for Cornwall. I know you all do, otherwise you wouldn't be here. So we're working on an environmental strategy, a 50-year plan. Not just a short-term fix to get us over this fiscal problem that we're having, but a long-term vision for Cornwall that pulls together all the issues we talked about, waste, about education, about energy, about workspace, about playing space, all those together. It is ambitious. It's being led by myself and the Strategic Environment team in Cornwall Council, on behalf of the Nature Partnership, of which Kevin Gaston is the co-chair. So that's what we're embarking on. That will be coming across your computers or an engagement day. So get involved. My final thing is to say thanks to Rachel Bice for helping bring this presentation together, because I was quite daunted by it. But thank you very much for listening, and I hope it's stimulated some thoughts for you. I have no idea about the timing,
either. I'm Sarah Bowler. I was just wondering if there's any moves in Cornwall Council, because listening to you, it sounds as though one of the things we need are new role models and ways of doing things, and the nature of the way organisations run in this Victorian silo is something that seems to me, if we don't see a pattern from the top, it's very difficult for people to change other than sort of as activists underneath. So I just wondered if there was any thinking about Cornwall Council changing.
Thank you for your question. I think the Cornwall Council is like a big super tanker. It takes a long time to turn it around, and I think that there has been changes, just the way we arrange our directorates, changing my portfolio and my way of thinking. So I think it is changing. It is a challenge, I have to say, because if you think the property department are challenged with bringing in savings by the disposal of assets, that's a tension there, and then there's a tension over here for something else. So it's not saying it's easy, but I think the current administration really wants to get to grips with that. But I don't think it's going to... We need to up the pace of it, but I think it's going to take a bit of time to embed that in. Been an enormous amount of change, well, since 2009, by the way we organise ourselves in Cornwall anyway, and that's taking time to bed in. But I feel I see a chink, I do see some light, so keep the faith.
And one final question for Simon.
Yeah. Sorry, just get through.
Thank you. My name's Simon Ricks. I thought it was a brilliant talk there, Edwina, really balanced and thoughtful, so thank you for that. My question is about how we get the silent majority's voice heard. I mean, I'm just looking at the beautiful wind turbines over there. There's a minority of people who hate them, and they're often the people who are heard the most. But you know, any independent poll shows that the vast majority of people actually support, you know, onshore wind turbines, even near them. But most politicians don't think that because their inbox is full of the antis. So how do we get the silent majority more involved in all these debates?
I think we sometimes are apologetic. We play to that tune. I think we've got to be robust. I think we have to be more resilient to that. We've got to take the argument to that silent majority and not be kowtowed. One thing I think is a potential to bring that forward is through neighbourhood planning as part of the Localism Act. I was at a planning conference 2 days ago, and we deliberately drew the link between neighbourhood planning and community-led renewable energy. Now, the government have been quite slow to change that emphasis from developers, people coming in and that leakage of that income, and there's been big sums to be had from that, to making the architecture of it more suitable for individual communities. And I think if individual communities can see that actually they could support the opening of their toilets or support that bus service by the income and do a bit of good for the environment at the same time. I was quite disappointed in the room full of parish councillors that I was in 2 or 3 days ago, because they took the conversation to being about, well, they look bloody awful, don't they? And, oh, how much carbon was it to actually do that? What will happen in 25 years' time with that concrete base? You're missing the point. So it's partly that there is a mindset and it's a tunnel vision, and I think it's been hijacked for political reasons, and I think that's going to escalate until the general election next year. But we must take that ground and not be deflected from the great benefits and that one planet approach.